ask just what time is an 8:30 meeting supposed to start anyway? And that's kind of a hint to me to get this show on the road. Several other people are invited, and it will probably be a few minutes before they all drift in. But we'll start now. I want to thank everybody who's made an attempt to get here and all the work that it takes to do that. We're going to have a Forest Legacy Program overview today. There's no bills before us as such, but there's an awful lot to learn, and I sure am looking forward to this hearing. Let's start with Jimmy Kagan of the Oregon Natural Heritage Program. Welcome. We're glad you're here this morning.
For the record, this is Jimmy Kagan. I'm the director of the now Oregon Natural Heritage Information Center, which is part of the Oregon State University Information Office of the Institute for Natural Resources. Can we get this? Okay.
There you go.
I thought we weren't supposed to have anything in color because of the economic problems of the state.
That's the state.
Oh.
He's not the state.
Okay. I am too, unfortunately. This is Oregon State University, but this was prepared.
Before, but yeah, okay.
This was prepared about a year and a half
ago.
Checking the accountability here, yeah. Mr. Chair.
This was prepared when they still were allowed to use color.
Okay.
That's right. And basically, much of this presentation that I'm going to go through rather quickly was the same presentation that was parts of the same presentation that was provided at public meetings throughout the state when we were running this program about a year and a half ago or evaluating it. So the Forest Legacy Program was established in 1990 by the Farm Bill. It initially took place in the northeastern U.S. and in Washington State. And over the years, it's focused almost exclusively on protecting forests, identifying and protecting those areas that were most threatened by conversion from forests to non-forest uses. It focused on conservation easements and other efforts to promote land protection and to focus stewardship. I will relax in about 2 seconds. The primary forest legacy values were forests that were working in scenic recreation resources, fish and wildlife, and endangered species, significant forest habitats, which we'll talk about a little bit more, and riparian areas. These are all things that are outlined in the Farm Bill, in the initial Forest Legacy Act. It's a federal-state partnership. The Forest Service provides funding and technical assistance to state forestry in their cooperative forestry programs. 75% of all the funds come from the feds. 25% has to come from state or local sources. Currently, the way the program's set up, easements or property have to be held by state or local governments. And state or local governments are also responsible for monitoring those easements. The program is entirely voluntary, and only interested landowners participate in funding for this program. In Oregon, now will be limited. When we started this thing, there were only about 20 programs in the national effort. Right now, there's close to 30, so there's a lot of national competition for funds. The key points that we want to demonstrate about this program is that the need and the program in general, which is based on an assessment of need, was created by a plan. It was a public plan, and there was public input around the state. The plan's clearly focused, since there's a limited amount of resources on the highest priority areas, and the needs are outlined clearly in the plan. You guys have a copy of this Forest Legacy Plan here as well, which outlines both the need for the program and how it's to be implemented in the state. The assessment of need basically does those three things I just mentioned. Outlines the program, provides maps of the forest legacy areas, which I'll talk about in a bit, and talks about the criteria for selecting programs, projects, and how the program's going to work, and sets goals and objectives for the program. The assessment of need was based on an analysis that used a lot of data that we had available already. We're fortunate to have analysis through the Oregon Biodiversity Project, the Gap Analysis Project, the State of the Environment Report that recently got completed by OSU. the Northwest Forest Plan and the Interior Columbia River Basin assessments, which were federal assessments for the east and west side, and a bunch of data that ODF and OSU had on forests and forest changes. Because of this, we were able to do this pretty quickly. Our office was funded by ODF to develop this analysis. And this analysis basically, by law, was focusing on both economic as well as ecological and social criteria. We chose to use ecoregions and counties to look at the different areas, and we defined as a result legacy areas. Briefly, I wanted to go through some of the information we used in selecting these legacy areas and figuring out how to prioritize them. The primary goal of the program is to protect forest lands on private lands from being converted to non-forest uses, and so the primary data we use is the actual distribution of those forest lands. This map shows all of the forest lands in the state. In dark green are the locations of the private forest lands. So because of the legislation, we're restricted to just look at those areas in dark green. We also looked at other economic factors. We looked at both community economic dependence on timber. This information came from ODF. We looked at information that we got from the economic department that looked at distressed areas as of September 2000, which is when we were doing this analysis. These show counties that were in economic distress and as well as local communities. We looked at growth and things that might impact forests, and the only statewide analysis that we had was the census data. This is a map that shows county change, population change in each of the counties, pretty obviously demonstrating the increase in the Portland metro area and Lane County and Jackson, Josephine County, and Deschutes County in particular, which is where all the population growth was. We had two sets of data that made the biggest case for the need of the program. The first one is outlined in this particular guide that came from ODF. It's called Forest Farms and People. This is the second edition they had, but what they've been doing over the last almost 10, 12 years now is spending a lot of time looking at forest losses and analyzing forest losses. This is a map that summarizes those forest losses that have occurred. For many years, Oregon Forestry and the state chose not to get involved in the Forest Legacy Program because the view was our laws did a perfectly good job in protecting forests from becoming non-forests. The fact is we have great statewide planning goals, and the planning goals have done a really good job of protecting forests, especially the working forests. However, there have been significant loss, and this map here shows those losses that have occurred in the last 10 years. Again, just for Western Oregon, the new one is shows slightly broader areas.
Mr. Chair, may I interrupt?
Yes.
First of all, I would like to thank you for extending the courtesy of allowing me to sit up here with the Senate side of the building. It's an interesting experience to do that. And I was just wondering if it was, do you have any numbers about the percentage of land that is classified as forest land that's been converted to other uses?
They are. Those numbers are included in here.
Okay, thank
you. I actually don't know them off the top of my head. And actually, they did divide it into areas and they also talk about what those forests have been converted to. Some to, you know, urban development, some to rural residential development, some to agriculture.
Thank you.
Continue.
Okay. In addition to the actual forest losses, we had an analysis from Oregon State University at the Forest Sciences Lab that looked in Western Oregon at predicted losses. And basically they took this data that ODF had developed and looked at land use change, projected it out into the future. And it's hard to see, but especially if you look at a Western Oregon thing, but if you zoom in on these areas, you can see that the pink areas areas are areas that basically were predicted forest loss by 2005. They did this in 10-year increments, 1995 to 2005 to 2015. And the orange areas are those areas that were predicted to have forest losses. And OSU has published a paper on this as well, and they have numbers, although I don't believe those numbers are included in here. But one of the things that we did in this is basically looked at places where forests were projected to be lost and used those to prioritize areas that we were going to choose. And then by law, you were supposed to look at wildlife and endangered species. Here's a map that shows the distribution of threatened endangered species populations in the state. And here's another map that, here's a list of the priority species. For the statewide analysis, we had a list of species that were prioritized based on the fact that their habitats have declined significantly and they're not very well represented in the conservation network of wilderness areas and reserves, late successional reserves, and so on. For each of those species, we had distribution maps that showed their predicted ranges, and we were able to use those in the analysis as well. And then the other data that we used to look at forest losses was a comparison of the historic vegetation map and the existing vegetation map. This is the map that shows the historic data. Our office put it together based on GLO survey notes, which are the historic notes from 1850, and other data that we had. This is an approximation of what the forests of Oregon looked like in 1850. When you compare that with this current map, which shows forests in 2000, you can see that there's been significant differences, both in certain types of forests which have declined significantly, as well as in the places where forests have changed. If you overlay the two of them here in red, you get those areas where there used to be forests and there are no forests now. In green, you have areas where there didn't used to be forests and there are now, and that's almost entirely western juniper expansion. And in brown you have areas where forests were and forests are now. This shows very well the concentration of forest losses, at least historically, in the Portland metro area and the area around especially the Rogue Valley. And when you do that analysis of the historic vegetation types and the existing ones, certain forest habitat types showed really distinctive and major losses. These three in particular were the ones that have declined the most: ponderous pine forests and woodlands, cottonwood forests, and oak savannas and woodlands, which occupied much of the Willamette Valley. And so those areas were prioritized. So we developed a set of forest legacy areas. The focus of these areas were areas that needed effort to protect these important private forests. They would increase the economic stability and recreational opportunities, as well as promoting forest stewardship and community interest. In order for it to meet the criteria, they needed to have some type of environmental important forest that was immediately threatened by conversion. They needed to contain one or more of these values that are outlined in the legislation. And they needed to provide opportunities for traditional forest uses, either timber harvesting, forage management, outdoor recreation, or other things that the forest has been providing. When we first looked at these areas, we selected forest legacy areas. We used ecoregion lines and county lines and the distribution of private forests. And these are all the concentrations of private forests that we have in the state. After we evaluated it using all of that data, these areas were the final legacy areas that got chosen. Unfortunately, the Marion County legacy area came out in cream and is not very visible on this thing, but you can see it. There's, I believe, 15 of them. Actually, it's been a little while. And there are maps of these legacy areas in this plan, as well as in the Forest Legacy Assessment of Need, there's detailed maps that show boundaries of all of these areas. As part of the analysis and through the public hearings, we were able to prioritize these areas based on changes and losses. So the highest priority area was the area in Lane County, but the second highest priority were the two other areas in Deschutes County and the southern Willamette Valley, and the third highest was the Portland metro area, based on the combination of those other factors that we evaluated. The last thing that we developed in this plan was a site selection criteria. The fact is, Forest Legacy has a finite amount of money, and we were able to prioritize what criteria was going to be used to select those areas. That'll be talked about. How the selection process was undertaken will be talked about by other people. But basically, the primary things were the fact that it had to be found in a legacy area. The federal government won't fund anything if it's not in one of our legacy areas. The significance of the ecological, social, economic values was considered the most significant. Viability and the importance of the site to other forest lands was the second most. And obviously local interest and presence of partners was critical, since there is a 25% match required and there is no ability for us to assume that there will be any state match. So the assumption in the program development was that local governments were going to have to come up with the match. The way the Forest Legacy Program works and was established was ODF as the lead agency. They manage the program. They work with participating owners to assist in the development of stewardship plans, which are critical for site selection, and they coordinate the program. The Oregon Watershed Enhancement Board has been involved in assisting, both to potentially help with match funding and staff expertise. Our office is also helping with prioritization and additional information, and the U.S. Forest Service Region 6 Cooperative Forestry Office provides funding, scale, and administrative oversight. That's basically a brief version of the program, how it's worked, and the analysis. Other people will talk about how it's being implemented. If you guys have any questions on how this stuff was put together or the specifics of it, I'd be happy to answer them now.
I'm sure we have lots of questions to ask. We are going to try to keep them as short as we can because we have a lot of information to try to digest this morning. But maybe we'll call you back, too.
That's just fine.
Okay.
Thank you.
Hillary Abram.
Do you want to pin this off?
I don't know if it's a really like the picture.
Hillary's used to keeping us in the dark, so this is not new.
Thank you for the commentary, Senator Corbin.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members of the committee. For the record, my name is Hillary Abraham, and I'm here today to provide the committee some background information on the process that we use to identify and later submit projects to enroll Oregon in the Forest Legacy Program. One of the requirements under the Forest Legacy Program is the participation of an advisory committee to the state's Department of Forestry. In Oregon, the department created a subcommittee out of the already existing Forest Lands Coordinating Group, of which I'm a member, to address the legacy program, and I was asked at the time to serve as chair of that subcommittee. So it is in this capacity that I'm here before you today. The task of the committee was to take the letters of interest, which were submitted to Department of Forestry, and weigh them against the criteria that were established in Oregon's assessment of need, and rank them projects. It is then the job of the State Department of Forestry to submit these projects to the USDA Forest Service Pacific Northwest Region. The Forest Service then ranks the recommended projects as part of a regional ranking process, which includes Washington State. Next, these projects were further modified within the national ranking process and eventually find their way into the President's budget. So for our initial cut, we received 13 letters of interest for this program, four of which expressed inquiry about the program and were not complete enough at the time with enough information to evaluate for fiscal year 2003 funding. The subgroup then evaluated the remaining 9 letters of interest based on the evaluation criteria. In the interest of time, I will only highlight Oregon's criteria as listed in the AON in priority order. So basically, the criteria that we use to rank the projects is as follows. One, the significance of the ecological, social, and or economic values of the property, the viability and importance of the site to other forest lands, local support and presence of partners and or matching fund, the immediacy of conversion threats to the site, and the priority of the forest legacy area that the property is in. The original list that Oregon submitted included two projects in Lane County. There are the South Eugene Hills and Coburg Hills project, a project in Multnomah County called Hogan Butte, a project in Clackamas County called Upper Abernathy, and a project in Benton County called Fitton Green Edition. The two which eventually made the president's budget for fiscal year 2003 included South Eugene Hills and Coburg Hills, and these were ranked within his request as number 15 and 43, respectfully. There are representatives here today who are much more closely tied to the projects than I, so I don't want to take a lot of time describing them, but I will say that the committee put a lot of energy and time and consideration into evaluating these projects and the evaluation criteria which did decide, which guide our decisions. I will also add that in each of the instances, these projects, there is no state match required. They fall within the local plans of the local jurisdictions where they are located, and in each case, they are projects that have been initiated by private landowners who have made the decision to enroll their property in the program. To many, the Forest Legacy Program does represent one reasonable and balanced approach to addressing some environmental, economic, and recreational issues at the local level. Nationally, incentive-based programs like Legacy are gaining attention and recognition. For the year fiscal year 2004, for example, President Bush's budget request is $90.8 million for this program, a significant increase from past appropriations, which started at $5.5 million in the early 90s and was $68.3 million for fiscal year 2003. Because it is a voluntary, incentive-based, and strategic program which focuses on partnerships at the local level, I do believe this project is a very good fit for Oregon. To date, however, we have not been able to fully participate in the program because of some concerns that have been expressed at the state level, and it is certainly my hope today that we will be able to address those concerns, or at least today's hearing will serve as a first step in that direction. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Hillary.
Do you have any questions?
Are there any questions? We're going to keep on moving here. Ted Lawrenson, the Assistant State Forest. While he's coming up, I want to welcome Senator Messerly. As you can see from the outline, Jimmy Kagan has already shared with us. You're probably aware of the assessment of need and the Forest Farms and People document that he handed to us. And you've got that and other information.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Ted,
we've got to make
the machine work again.
Senator Shields, members of the committee, and other exalted guests, my name is Ted Lawrenson. I'm Assistant State Forester with the Oregon Department of Forestry. I think the background's been very good. I think going from the stopping point in terms of where we had a program and then we had applied for funding for the emergency board is probably the right place to start. In the summer, past summer 2002, the department went to the emergency board to ask for approval to get authorization to expend legacy grant dollars on this program. At that time, we learned that there were concerns with regard to the policy implications of the program, and I think in hindsight, certainly our eagerness to get a program in place with the interests that were working with us and also the readily available data to do the analysis resulted in us is overlooking some of these key issues. And so not wanting to make that get any worse, we suspended our application process for the projects and are now coming back to discuss the policy concerns. On page 4 of 6 of the testimony provided is a list of what we view as the major concerns, and certainly not all the concerns, but the major concerns that have been raised to us. We're going to go through a PowerPoint discussion on a summary in terms of the decision space around those and some of the implications for those concerns. I think the issues really identify the need to discuss scope of the program, and to some degree the policy discussion around these issues helps frame that. Also, there are certain issues with regard to timing, and again, there are federal funds available to the program, and timing with regard to when we can get approval or not will affect our ability to get access to those federal funds that are currently available. With that, Jimmy Kagan did a nice job talking about the policy objective. It's fairly broad to maintain the forest land base for lands that are threatened with conversion. And go ahead. With regard to the decision space, the program could emphasize forests that are high in economic value or commercial value, or it can emphasize forests that are high in ecological or social values. As was discussed when we originally looked at the program when it was implemented back in the early 90s, we thought that the state's land use program did an excellent job in protecting forests high in commercial value, thus there wasn't a strong need for the program. And as discussed, it was kind of revisited in the last couple of years. And we really settled down on a range where the program in Oregon can do any of these things, but with some relative emphasis on those forests with high social and economic values, as discussed, the oak, woodlands, the cottonwood riparian forests, etc. Part of the dilemma with this overall program is in terms of looking at what's appropriate balance for Oregon's interests in the context then of the other issues that we'll be discussing. It's fair to say that the land use program does a good job of protecting forest high and commercial value, and Representative Morgan's question, our study in terms of land use conversion shows that for forest lands that are zoned for forest uses, the rate of conversion is very low, and that where conversion does occur, it's generally in those areas where conversion was anticipated. Nonetheless, it's also fair to say that the land use program emphasized protecting both ag and forest lands in the context of the commercial values and did not probably anticipate very well other ecosystem values. And my experience is goal 5, the goal that really is designed to address those other values, is kind of immature, particularly with some of these more recent sets of information that demonstrate some issues with regard to forests. Another issue is consistent with local government and land use plans and compatible statewide land use goals. It's fair to say that state law requires very specifically that agency programs that affect land use be conducted consistent with both land use plans and that be compatible with statewide land use goals. The program, as we put it together, assumed compatibility and anticipated consistency being achieved through the responsibility of the local government. We've not done the compatibility process in terms of the state agency coordination program. There are a number of issues. Certainly, discussed the Goal 5 resources, what that compatibility means, and protection of those resources, compatible with Goal 3 and 4. And as discussed, the marginal lands issue kind of falls outside of both Goal 3s and 4s. Those are often the areas that are zoned for development. And given current state of knowledge, we understand there are some other resource values there that the land use programs may not well consider. There are other issues that are very specific to the coordination requirement. Local government may regulate forest practices and urban growth boundaries, and that sets a number of consistency issues. And within exception areas, local government may prohibit forest practices. So again, that is a factor you've got to consider as we go through the consistency process. If we don't achieve compatibility, development pressures may be transferred to those lands that we are otherwise trying to protect through Goal 4 or Goal 3. Forest legacy may also limit the ability of local plans to be implemented or be updated as intended, and we'll show some illustrations of that later. And we do have to adopt these state agency coordination rules, which we've not done, and to the degree that that process by itself may affect the scope of the program ultimately. We did do a map, this is in some of your materials as well, that shows the legacy areas overlaid with the zoning. And as you can see, the red is urban growth boundaries, the yellow are rural residential areas, the brown is agriculture, and green is forest. And the legacy areas are outlined in the relatively hard to see, but they are visible yellow lines there. And clearly one of the issues in terms of compatibility is the legacy areas encompassed relatively large areas of urban lands as well as rural residential lands. Those are lands that are planned for development to some degree, and we've not gone through the compatibility process of asking the question, what does compatibility mean, and what are the unintended consequences of forest legacy in those areas? This is a specific illustration, more detail of the Eugene forest legacy area outlined in purple. And again, it shows the urban growth boundary in the rural residential area. I believe one of the legacy projects you'll hear about later today is in the South Eugene Hills, and again, it kind of overlaps both the forest zone and the rural residential zone. And the context, again, for what is compatibility, we've not addressed, and that's something we need to go back and revisit. Another issue is looking at maintaining working landscapes involving forest land with high conservation values. That's basically the decisions base is really, do we want to emphasize high economic values, have priority in project selection, or do you want to emphasize forest lands with high ecological values having priority in project selection? It's probably fair to say that current program design is on the right-hand side of that. And again, in terms of the scope of that, non-commercial forest lands, such as oak woodlands, generally have lower priority in project selection if we move towards economic values. And as assessment of need, I think, well describes, those types of forests are of concern and for legitimate reasons. The social consequences, again, there's kind of a different type of ownership in each one of those emphasis areas. The high economic value lands tend to be large parcels of lands, large contiguous areas of commercial forest, whereas the high ecological and social value lands tend to be smaller parcels with a mix of land use and ownership patterns. The choice here really influences how we maintain economic activity over time and the tax base associated with either the commercial use or the non-commercial use of forests. Impacts local government tax base and taxes. It's fair to say we've not done a lot of analysis on this as well, but the decision space is again relatively broad. We could make a policy choice to have no reduction in tax base or loss of tax revenues, or we could have a decision that we've currently done to allow some reduction in that. Clearly a number of consequences based upon your choice in that decision space. If you emphasize no reduction in tax base, there would be much fewer opportunities to address forest lands with high ecological values given where they're set at this point in time. It's also say that depending upon choices, forest legacy projects may impact who pays taxes as well as the amount of taxes paid. Clearly the consequences of our choices here also relate to economic activity in the tax base in terms of the commercial use of forest land. So there's some real implications here. We've not done a whole lot of analysis, but there's a wide decision space in terms of scope. Another concern is what is the possible environmental nexus with respect to federal laws. The way we've set up the program at this point in time is the decision to grant the projects are independent actions of the state and the private landowners, and thus are not held under the nexus of federal consultation under federal ESA or NEPA. But we could, and the program allows for federal acquisition of easements or the title. And in that case, then the nexus is applied where consultation would be required to the extent that federal action affects endangered species or require impacts on the environment. Another issue that's been raised is maintaining forest land and private ownership. We've got a wide decision space there. We could set a policy of no change in private ownership at all, where basically we'd use easements or, as the current program allows for, but does not require encompassing the forest land in terms of local government or public ownership. Again, the consequences of that, are issues in terms of landowners not wanting to retain ownership, and that may then impact their ability or willingness to enter into an agreement for forest legacy. It reduced overall flexibility for providing public access in some cases. In terms of the economics, maintaining the private ownership does have some implications in terms of the tax base and tax revenue, but easements could also shift that burden as well. So. There are issues of monitoring. Basically, how do we make sure the program is implemented over time, as the plans would say? The way we've set the program up is all legacy projects would have to have a management plan, and that monitoring implementation of that plan is delegated to local government or the Partnering Land Trust Agency. The state could formally take on that role. So this plan wouldn't have that in kind of the current design. In terms of monitoring the easements, again, that's delegated back to local government, and there are issues there, but if we move to more state monitoring, it's again, resource-based issues in terms of whether we can do that or not. Nonetheless, I think in both cases, the projects will be held accountable for the state environmental benefits. State oversight would probably do a better job of ensuring state goals are met, but not necessarily. And I guess bottom line is the state Department of Forest doesn't have the funds to do that at this point in time either.
Okay.
And that's kind of the framework of the policy space and what we saw as the major issues, and gives you some sense of the issues that have been raised to us. It's fair to say on the land use issue, we do have to go through the state agency coordination process. We've not done that. And again, that could affect the scope of the program.
We're at a juncture here where we've heard from some experts, you might say, on the subject. And we begin a list of people who will testify from Springfield and Eugene and, you know, localities. But everybody that spoke so far has kind of spoken in a statewide context. And so I guess I want to take a moment here to ask you, as a committee and guests, if you have questions you'd like to ask either of Jimmy or Hillary or Ted generally about what we've learned. I mean, there's so much information here. It's hard for me to comprehend it all. I'm sure I'll be accused more than once of being a city boy that doesn't understand all this stuff. For instance, Ted, the one continuum that you had up there that had no change in ownership because it's an easement kind of thing, and I understand that it's supposed to be monitored by the local government. Has there ever been a situation, not in Oregon, of course, since we're not doing it, but in another state where maybe an easement was given and then somebody just kind of ignored the easement and went ahead and did other things with it and local monitoring wasn't sufficient and everything got all balled up?
Chairman Shields, members of the committee, my name is Dr. Jim Cathcart. I'm kind of the staff lead on Forest Legacy for the Oregon Department of Forestry. In terms of our experience, this is a new arena for us in monitoring easements as an agency. I have attended some national conferences, and that is an issue with the states. You kind of get a cumulative burden on being able to track these parcels and whether the easements and the easement language is being adhered to. That's an infrastructure issue that state agencies, even if we delegate it to the local governments, need to put in place the ability to track easements and have reports to make sure that their intent is being made. In terms of our program, too, we would have that with the forest management plan because that's a requirement that these parcels have and these lands be actively managed.
So, if I can follow up a little bit, if these easements are intended to address concerns of people that don't want to see land move from private ownership to public ownership, does the burden after a while of monitoring the easement, which remains in the private hands, does that become more complex than just the outright purchase? I mean, how does that balance out, and what have you heard around the country in these conferences?
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, I think what really makes these arrangements work is the partnerships that put them together. You have a landowner that's trying to meet a conservation vision for the land and is looking as the easement as the tool to get some compensation for economic values foregone, opportunities foregone. The partners with the matching funds, the community, their interest is the public benefit. You know, they have to put their dollars into the project, and their community mandates that they get a public benefit from those expenditures. The land trusts play a role in that they're organized around some conservation values or goals that they want to see, and so they get interested in certain properties because of that. The easement is a legal document that prohibits the sale of the development rights. And so, I mean, that is formally retired and held by the local government. So that aspect of it could be legally challenged if for some reason somebody tried to sell the development rights. You have title to that. You own those development rights. So in that sense, I think we have a legal structure that protects that interest. Our vision under Forest Legacy, though, is how do you get the management vision fulfilled? And there's different ways of doing that. Our tendency is to do, our approach would be to use the management plan and set goals and objectives and use a management plan that you have consensus among those partners that this is the vision for the property, these are the tools and resources we need to manage it, and these are the desired outcomes. That gives you flexibility to update as things go over time. Another approach or another model, though, is to actually put those kind of management constraints, if you will, in the easement itself and then hold title to those forestry limitations, and similar to like the development rights. And that's a model that has been used in other states. That you can use both, but sometimes when you put it in the easement, there's a permanence issue that you're locking yourself into. And sometimes then you may find yourself with situations that you didn't anticipate, and you're getting locked in terms of the terms of the easement. But I think in terms of who's watching what's happening on the grounds, it's the vested interests of the partners. They're interested in those conservation values. These groups watch over that. The landowner's interested in the property and their vision for the property. The state, the local government's interested in the public benefits that justified their participation. So that's really what keeps the attention that the right things happen.
Thank you very much. Anybody else have questions? Senator Beyer.
Thank you. Ted, where's the funding coming from that the Department of Forestry has to date spent on the Forest Legacy Program?
Chair Shields, Senator Beyer, members of the committee, it's come out of our overall cooperative forestry grant that we get from the Forest Service in terms of private forest land assistance. So we had a funding to implement assessment of need process, and right now we don't have any additional funding, if I understand.
Jim? That's correct.
Yeah, that's correct.
Mr. Chair, may I continue? Yeah. How many FTE have been working on that project?
Chairman Shields, Senator Beyer, members of the committee, I have been working probably on a third-time basis over the last year on this project. Some of that time was compensated directly through a planning and analysis funding for Forest Legacy. That money was used up by June. We've scaled back our participation in Forest Legacy for that reason, but we also have some federal funds, stewardship funds, that the Forest Service feels that Legacy and our effort to expend those funds on this is appropriate.
Another question, Mr. Chair?
Yes, Senator Beyer.
Thank you. Ted, as long as I've been on a protection board at the local level, Clackamas Marion District in particular, which has been about 20 years, we have been struggling with the urban-rural interface, and the direction has been at the local level to get the forestry department as much as possible out of the urban-rural interface. And the fact that the forestry department has no business being there, those are not commercial forest lands anymore, and the commercial forest land owners are paying for the protection of these lands. This program seems to reverse that trend, and it has the forestry department heavily going back into the urban-rural interface and actually owning, potentially owning lands there. I don't think that fits with the direction that, at least that we've given in the local Clackamas-Marion level. Can you comment on that?
Senator Shields, Senator Beyer. Yeah, in terms of the fire program, I guess I'd say generally as development proceeds, there's a point in time when it becomes very prudent for the Department of Forestry to make a fundamental decision to no longer provide fire protection. Other hand, we do have an interest and have been engaged in urban forestry and other issues outside of the commercial forest lands for a number of years in relatively limited programs. Again, we're struggling ourselves with this program in terms of what's proper scope, and to some degree that legacy areas encompass goal four forest lands, to some degree they encompass wide areas of urban lands, and I think that's part of what we're looking for you guys is advice in terms of what's the state's interest there. I think as you look at the potential conflicts with both land use issues, with our core businesses and that sort of thing, as we focus on urban areas, it becomes more problematic. As we move out to more forested areas, it becomes more linked. That being said, I think there's Legacy is a program designed to be a tool to meet a range of interests, and to the extent that those interests are appropriately met by that, I think that the scope can be adjusted there as well. But very clearly, the rural forest interface creates some dilemmas for us in a number of ways. On the other hand, as a tool, as an example, in Jackson, Josephine County, where we have non-resource lands that are really not forests, they're not zoned for development either, but have high fire risks, this might be a way of restricting development in those areas. So it could be a useful tool for fire and urban interface. It's not directed that way now. And we are really struggling ourselves with what should be the proper scope of this program. And in regard to Senator Shields' question, I think this is a good illustration in the sense of the difficulties in terms of tracking and implementing stuff, I think, also vary based upon the zoning. And made the point that with an urban growth boundaries, local government could regulate forest practices, and rural residential zones, local government could prohibit forest practices, and that by itself could create an inherent conflict with management plans and that sort of stuff down the road. So we're going to have to really consider those factors if we do have a program in those areas and ensure compatibility with those authorities, the local government, to regulate there.
One more, Mr. Chair. Thank you. I think you said that in the early 90s it was decided that the policy was that our land use laws did an adequate job protecting, but that 10 years, 12 years later now, someone's rethinking that. Who made that decision to rethink that you know, decision, I guess, the initial decision?
Chairman Shields, Senator Beyer, members of the committee, on your testimony, I think we discussed that. Can't put my finger on it, but essentially, yeah, it was in 2001, the Defenders of Wildlife, Trust for Public Lands, Land Council of Governments, and I think there was one other entity that mentioned approached the governor's office and asked the governor's office to relook and do an assessment of need to answer that question to see if the program indeed could be used in Oregon. So that was kind of initiated in 2001 by those groups with the governor's office.
I am assuming that this is not being done in a vacuum, of course. Other states have involved themselves in the Forest Legacy Project. And I know that probably Jimmy ran over this rather quickly earlier, but how many states would you, in your assessment, had moved farther along in this process than the state of Oregon?
Senator Shields and members of the committee, there's 31 states, I believe, that have programs at this point in time.
Operational. I mean, I consider this project not operational
right.
yet because we haven't done anything, but you're saying 31 have operational projects?
Yeah.
It would be 30.
30.
I'm getting some head nods. It's
around 30.
Around 30
yeah.
states.
I think that, as discussed earlier, the scope of those programs initially started off focusing on concerns about loss of large-scale industrial lands in the New England states. And there was a big effort to provide for a program to address that. And that was the original impetus, with Washington State and New England states being the limit on the program. And to a large degree, I think most states focus on that because Oregon's unique in its land use program. And but I do know that states of Idaho and Montana have recently used Legacy to acquire easements and Plum Creek, some large industrial landowners, to make sure that they don't sell those lands to summer home development in like the Swan Valley in Montana. They've also then bought the Montana Fish, Wildlife, and Parks access easements as well for public access to those lands and through the future. So each state's done things differently. The general focus has been the large scale industrial lands. I think it's fair to say Oregon's program, given that we have a land use program, that makes that something that's probably not very necessary. But I would say we've learned since this was developed that there are some issues with large-scale industrial lands that maybe we also want to look at if we do look at the scope of this again. Those are lands around Central Oregon, Bend area, and there's some probably coastal forests as well that fall in the same category. Nonetheless, Oregon's land use program does a good job protecting those types of forest lands. So that's why we initially said, gee, we don't need this program, and the revisit came out of fundamental concerns about the lack of certain forest types, like the oak types, being protected in developing areas, and that is a from a conservation perspective, a legitimate issue.
I have a lot more questions. I'm sure everybody does, but I want to keep moving. Ken, there, Senator Masterly, you had a question.
Yes, I do, Mr. Chair. Thank you. And maybe I missed it. I apologize for being late, Mr. Chair, coming in. But has the committee been addressed the issue of where we are with funding at this point? I know last summer and fall it was when this was kind of a hot item, we were hearing all kinds of statements about where the funding is, it's available, it's in the bank, all what they have to do is write a check to Oregon and these kind of things. But I'm also concerned, not only from the federal level, but I'm very concerned about the funding to operate the system in Oregon and what kind of match funding is available locally, whether that's set up. But we all know it's cost money to own property, whether it's just the fact that you've got neighbor issues, liability issues, and all those other factors to deal with. So I'm just concerned about the whole financial and an update to where the feds are and where the state is, and if it's been thought about who pays the cost of owning the property.
Senator Messerly, when I first framed us, I said these questions were for the three people that have already presented. Any of the three, you're welcome to respond. Any of you want to give a quick response to that? I don't know if it can be quick. Also, I think it would be important that the people that have come from localities like Springfield and Eugene and Portland and so on might also consider trying to answer your question about local funds as well.
Okay.
Hillary, you want to make a comment?
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, I was going to actually just say just that, that there are a number of individuals here from local governments as well as the landowners, and I think, Senator Messerly, your question may be answered, I'm not so sure, but perhaps providing them the opportunity to speak would give you a little bit more information to help frame your question.
I do want to do that. I know Representative Morgan has a question. Let's do that quickly and then try to get on.
Senator,
go ahead.
Maybe specifically to Senator Messerly's question on the federal funds available, I think Jim can give specific with regard to what's currently in the pipeline and the timing on that.
Yes, Chairman Shields, Senator Messerly, members of the committee. Right now, that came out of the fiscal year 2003 appropriations. There's $1,055,000 available for Oregon to apply for the South Eugene Hills project. So that's really the only money that's on the table with respect that could be available to Oregon if we choose to apply for that. With regards to administrative costs, when we apply for those grants, we also apply for some administrative dollars to administer those funds, you know, the project, the deal. In fiscal year 2002, that amount was a flat amount to the state agencies of $20,000. There is some discussion that the Forest Service may change the formula for the administration dollars and basically have it slide up or down depending on the number of transactions and the complexity of the transactions that you're involved with rather than a flat rate. In regards to the matching funds and the availability of matching funds, that's actually a project selection criteria. So when projects are proposed, and you, these projects are proposed kind of 2 years in advance of any knowledge of that you're going to get the money. It's kind of a field of dreams approach, build a deal and then see if the money will come. But so the match issue has to be in the deal or the project doesn't get any traction, doesn't get recommended. So we flush out the match in that respect. One of the items that we cannot spend administrative dollars on is the cost of the appraisals, the cost of the management plan. So those are items that have to be paid for by the local governments, by the funding partners. And, of course, with appraisals, we would have joint ownership of those appraisals. So they're an independent appraisal, not the appraisal offered by the seller, if you will. But there has to be a cost that is borne by the funding partners to get that work done.
Thank you. I'm both trying to keep an eye on the clock and get all the witnesses, so I'm going to give Representative Morgan a chance and then we'll move on.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. You have in your paper piles an email that was sent from Mr. Lawrenson to Senator Messerly and myself, and the date on that is September 18th of 2002, and I want to read just a short piece of that, and it says, however, this program, the Forest Legacy Program, as currently proposed, is mostly outside of the department's core businesses. With all the critical forestry issues we have on our plate directly related to our core businesses, investing further effort and state dollars in this program at this time doesn't make sense. Thus, in terms of developing a legislatively approved program, we'll be letting the key interests working with Forest Legacy know that they will need to work with the legislature to develop the program. ODF's role will be limited to participating as a technical policy resource in any legislative discussion, and we will not lead or sponsor any legislative initiative on this matter. We have also let the Forest Service and the applicants know that we will not be supporting the two proposed projects in the fiscal year 03 federal budget and that they can release the money for other purposes. In light of the discussion that we've heard that Dr. Cathcart is working on this project third time, with one-third of his time, and that the funding is still on the table for the Eugene project, can you discuss with the committee how this all relates?
Again, Jim's effort in terms of legacy has been relatively minor other than to facilitate getting discussion, and that's been kind of consistent with the message I've provided you. The federal funding, the way I understand it, the $2.5 million that we had in the pipeline, that's basically been Forest Service was informed we can't spend that. We weren't going to be able to get through the projects. I'm not quite sure why the $1.5 million is still appropriated, but it is. And Jim may be able to respond to that.
Yes, Chairman Shields, Representative Morgan, members of the committee, just a clarification on the third of my time. The first 6 months of 2002, when we had the planning of analysis grant, I was assigned staff lead and was working on this considerably as we were reviewing projects, developing the criteria, the assessment of need. Since June of 2002, when that money has ran out, my time has been reduced. And then in September of 2002, when we were looking at core businesses, functions, and time, that's where we indicated to the partners that my time would be limited in availability. So it's kind of been on a downward slide in terms of my time as the situation is warranted. The funding appropriations of the $1,055,000 for South Eugene Hills really did come as a surprise. We basically had indicated to the Forest Service that we had significant policy discussions and that we didn't think that we realistically would be in a position to apply for those funds, and we thought it was in the interest of the program and other states that had other uncovered needs that we didn't unfairly hang on to that money. Congress makes its own decisions and decided to keep $1,055,000 for the South Eugene Hills project, and I'm sure that's a result of the community's of interest, the partners involved in these projects thinking that they can be successful with this policy discussion.
Yeah, we don't have to be reminded, I don't think, of how little influence we have on what Congress does.
If I may follow.
At one point there was as much as, I think you said, $2.5 million, and that has been scaled back to the $1,055,000 because of our decision not to.
Yes, Chairman Shields, member of the committees. As Hillary indicated, we had two projects in the president's request for fiscal year 2003. That other project was Cobra Hills, and that did get zeroed out in the appropriations. So we only had the one project. So that's the reason why the number went down.
Well, I hope the money has been well used in another state someplace.
Chair Shields, members of the committee, I guess the other point I'd make is very clearly there's a range of analysis that needs to be done with regard to the scoping issue I described earlier in terms of impacts on land use, in terms of impacts on tax base. We've not done any of that because we felt it was inappropriate for us to take the lead on that, and we suggested to some of the interest groups that they do that kind of work and bring that information to you, and I hope that the folks behind us can offer that kind of information. We are confronted with the dilemma if this program does go forward of doing the state agency coordination program part of it, and we've not done that, and really don't know what kind of scope of work that would entail. Again, it's hard for me to envision how you would frame some of the compatibility issues and questions, and we have to engage DLCD in that process. So there'd be an impact from that as well in terms of that work.
I'd like to make a statement if I can, and that is, as I did on Monday's hearing or Friday's hearing or whenever it was when we talked about the whole issue of the Oregon Watershed Enhancement Board, I made a statement then that people of goodwill can disagree with one another. There are some people on this committee and some people who've been in front of me from the legislature are very supportive of Forest Legacy, Republicans and Democrats alike, and there's others that have real serious issues. My purpose this morning is to try and get as much information on the table as possible to shed as much light and as little heat as possible. With that in mind, I want to proceed as quickly as possible. I'll grant you one more question very quickly.
And I appreciate your interest in putting the information on the table, because there is a great deal of information here. And
more than I'm going to have time to read.
Really a lot of policy implications. And in the information on the table aspect, I would also offer up a memo that I wrote to then Senate President Durfler and Senator Messerly that, again, just gives some of the background of Forest Legacy, which I think has been very well handled here today, and an overview of some of the issues that need to be addressed if this is to move forward. And one of the things that most of this has already been covered in the discussions, and I'm not going to belabor it, but I would really urge the committee to also take a look at the other, there's a broad spectrum of programs that currently exist to address conservation needs and environmental issues as they relate to property, and I would really urge you to take a look at what already is in place to accomplish the goals of this program.
I would encourage that. I would also, Representative Morgan, suggest that the answer be expanded to look at if these programs exist in other states. Are they using those programs with or without, in conjunction or not in conjunction with Forest Legacy? Let's get it all out there. Senator Messerly has asked for a quick follow-up to his question.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. In the discussions about the finance, nothing has been mentioned about the application from Gresham, and I'm wondering, is that not an appropriate or a live request at this point, or is it dropped off the table? What's happening there?
Mr. Chair, I know that the city manager for Gresham is here, and I want to get to him as quickly as I can, too. Do you want a quick comment?
Yes, Chairman Shields, Senator Messley, members of the committee. The Hogan Butte project that was applied for by the landowner with a letter of interest with tremendous community support was an application for the fiscal year 2003 funding process. That process has come to conclusion. So if we're taking applications again for legacy projects, we would welcome an application of that project if it was still viable from the community's perspective.
I really want to move on, and maybe it would be wise, since we've been talking about things, to ask Ed Meeson. I'm sorry if I've destroyed that name, landowner in South Eugene, because this is the one where the $1 million is still in play, and ask if he could come up and share with us a few minutes his perspectives.
It's Meissen.
My apologies, Mr. Meissen.
Yeah, it's Edward Meissen, and I'm the owner of the South Eugene Hills Project, 160 acres in, on the edge of Eugene. I wanted to tell you about my involvement in this and my family's involvement, and explain why I think the Forest Legacy Program meets our goals as a family and residents in Oregon for a long time. The property is in the hot zone of development for Eugene. It, although it lies outside of the urban growth boundary, development of this site is possible for housing. And the site is what you call beautiful. I think most people really enjoy visiting this site. And it's beautiful not because it's covered with fast-growing fir trees that are merchantable. It's covered with oak trees and has meadows and interesting topography. There is a certain amount of production of timber. That's the way we've been managing this property for years. And my father and two uncles had in mind that they would like to develop one-acre lots. Well, that's not possible. They're outside the urban growth boundary. I don't think they really understood when they bought it that they couldn't do the one-acre lots. Currently, about eight lots are possible on this site. And I would describe myself as a conservation-oriented developer, which seems like I'm going in two directions at the same time, and I am. 5 years ago, people came to our family and wanted to buy this, clear-cut it, convert it to housing, and I stepped in and matched their price with the idea that I would put a project together to emphasize conservation and preservation and now restoration of this site. And I wanted to live there and sell off a couple lots to help preserve the character of this site. Well, the character of this site I've learned a lot about since. I've been taking time to educate myself about what oak woodlands and savannas are all about. And I'm impressed by what I've learned by attending meetings of a group here in Oregon. So I've learned a lot about the ecological importance of this site. And it's my goal now to see this property conserved and restored by doing various things that I think are probably contrary to what you would initially think. I don't know how far you want me to go into this, but there will be a timber removal to expand the oak areas, and we have about 550,000 board feet that are currently on the property, and I think that not all of it would be removed, but a significant amount. I think that would be addressed in the management plan prior to the sale. The essential reasons why I want to participate in Forest Legacy is that I'm volunteering to sell it to the city of Eugene in this case. I'm not being forced to sell it, and I am threatened by regulations that will obliterate the investment that I've made into this property. And it's not like I inherited this property. I just went out and spent money and matched this offer. My goals are a mix of conservation and development right now, but really the essential goal is conservation and restoration of this site. There's something else I want to say. As part of my education about what preservation of this land can do, I've gone to California to visit a couple of oak-oriented conservation sites. One is near Temecula. It's called the Santa Rosa Plateau Ecological Reserve. And it's an oak savanna, oak woodland type environment. It is a major tourist attraction in the area. And I kind of see that this could fit into that kind of attraction for Lane County and enhance the features that people come to Oregon to see. I don't think you're going to see a whole lot of timber production knocked out by conserving this site. It's among the lowest producing land for timber and ag in the state. So,
could you, since I know some people are probably dying to know, do you know how the $1 million managed to remain in the president's budget when the other money went away? I mean, obviously somebody knows how to talk to more than just the Oregon legislature in this
process. I don't know.
Okay.
I had pretty much given up participating in this program until 2 days ago, and it was a surprise to me. But I'm thankful because it really does help me meet my goals, my family's goals, of transferring it into ownership that will manage it for the features that I think are valued by the people of Oregon. I think that if you ask most people in Oregon, should we accept this $1,055,000 from the federal government to buy a piece of land in the South Eugene Hills for preservation of the forest features and recreational features, they would say, yeah, go for it. If they say you let that money pass by you and you didn't take it, I think most Oregonians would say, you fools, why did you let this money pass through?
Yeah.
This is a really good thing. This is really getting to the key values that are expressed by most people in Oregon.
since we love ballot measures so much, maybe we ought to put it on the ballot and let people vote on whether we should take this $1,055,000. Senator Meyer.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. A couple questions. I guess, number one, what regulations are threatening the use of your land as timberland?
As timberland?
Well, I got the impression you bought the parcel because it's timberland and you wanted to keep it for that purpose and to build a house on it, you said?
The regulations are not threatening the parcel as timberland. The primary reason why I bought the property was not to grow timber. That is one of the aspects of owning this site, but really, I bought it because I wanted to find a way to conserve the basic character of the site, and as a method of doing that, I rezoned the property in Lane County with a year of activity. And the idea was that purchasing this site wouldn't be a total loss for me because I could sell a couple lots, live there, and manage it for the features that I enjoyed, timber being one of them.
Okay, Mr. Chair, I guess I'm confused because I heard you make a statement that regulations are threatening the value of your land.
Right, and would you like me to explain that?
Yeah, I guess that's the
downzoning.
Timberland.
Yeah, downzoning. See, I am preserving these features that are ecologically significant to the people of Oregon as expressed in this assessment of need. I mean, I knew I liked the land, but now it's been detailed through various studies by various groups, private and public. You know, why is this important? Well, there are many reasons. If I preserve these features, then as people find out that this is more and more rare type of habitat, people will want to downzone me again and take me back to zero lots, which is really the highest value that you can have with a forest land. I mean, these lots that are in the South Hills are selling for $200,000 and $300,000. So you can take a parcel that's worth $1 million to $2 million and make it worth $200,000, $300,000. That's on my mind. It's basically a downzoning, or it could result, you know, could come about in an area that you don't understand. Endangered species, possibly. You know, people use various methods to preserve property. And this is a great way to do it because I'm being paid the fair market value of this property. I'm not being downzoned. I'm not being regulated. I'm volunteering. And I think the winners are the state because the money is coming from the federal government and partly from the local bond measure in Eugene. But see, I'm sitting there on the edge of the city, which is what I call the hot zone of development. I mean, the neighbors, when they hear of a development going in, will say, well, no, that shouldn't happen because I look at it and I enjoy it, and it should be a park. And this is a way of not exactly making it a park, but compensating the owner of private property for preserving those key values.
Mr. Chair, I asked some other questions privately, but I guess I would just like to make a statement that as an owner of private timberland, not in the Eugene area, but mostly in Clackamas County, I face these problems every single day. And I own one parcel that is now an island. The county has made it an island because I have chosen not to develop it. It's surrounded by 5-acre parcels and smaller, and my parcel is only 8-acre minimum, only because as an island, it's now the park for the neighborhood. This is a example of what private forest landowners face every day in Oregon, and I guess I would say that for those who bought your property knowing where it was, you knew the risks of that. In my case, I've owned the property since 1955. It's been in our family. At that time, there were no other houses around it. We've been swallowed without our input. So
I just make sure that everyone recognizes that it's not an issue that's only faced in South Eugene.
Well, I'm sure there are a lot of details both about your property and Ed's property this morning that we just don't have time to ferret out. I'm not sure that it's fair to have a simple statement of comparison without a lot more time than we have this morning. And with that, I want to do something here. Many of you probably saw Senator Atkinson enthusiastically in front of the podium saying, I wish I could be here this morning. And he presented me with a Jacksonville Trails map and told me that I absolutely have to get Larry Smith up here from the Jacksonville Woodlands Association, and I need to ask him why there's a Jacksonville parade. It's a Larry Smith parade every year. A Larry Smith Day. We got to get him up, and then I'm going to get back into the order of the flow here. Larry, can you come up? We've never met.
Is this over 10?
No, it's not over 10.
Might be for me.
Might be for you. It ended several minutes ago for Representative Morgan. I've been teasing you a little bit, but you certainly have a fan in Senator Atkinson, apparently.
Senator Shields, best of the committee, I appreciate a fan of Senator Atkinson. My name is Larry Smith from the Jacksonville Woodlands Association. And I think one reason that Senator Atkinson is so excited is because we have become one of the most successful citizen-based conservation association in the whole state. And we're totally volunteer. We have no paid people. And so our administrative costs run about 0.3% of a project. And the rest of it goes into the project itself. We've just been handed a trails map, and Senator Atkinson handed one to Senator Shields. And there's an almost personal connection there, Senator Shields. Look at the little boy on the front. You have a six-year-old sitting next to Peter Britt, who's the icon of Jacksonville. That little boy is my grandson, and his name is Matthias Shields. Don't know if there's any relationship, but it's my daughter married into the Shields family.
Thank you, Senator Corker. You do try to continue ignoring my good colleague from Cottage Grove as much as possible.
The reason that I've been asked to come up here and talk about the Jacksonville Woodlands Project is because we are a citizen-based community group that is working toward protecting the land around historic Jacksonville. And what we've done is we brought together the forests of Jacksonville that are in the immediate area. We have brought together cultural history because much of this area was gold mined, and so the gold mines are still there and the evidence of it. And also we have a third element that is very strong, and that's a educational strand that goes all the way through this. So we have land preservation, we have cultural resources that are being preserved, and we're also educating people at the same time. Then there's a fourth one that just happens to come along with that, and that's the recreational part. We have 8 miles of trails that go throughout this project. We started in 1989, and our membership now is around 600 supporters, and we've been able to protect 310 acres of mostly oak woodlands. And judging from the maps we've seen, this is one of the top priorities of the Forest Legacy Project. We're also in the Rogue Valley, which is number two on the priority list of the Forest Legacy Project. Talking about our educational programs, we have won 4 national awards for our work with students. I'm a school teacher on the side, plus doing the Woodlands Project. We produced videotapes, trail brochures, which you have in front of you, educational booklets. 25 acres of the actual gold mines have been placed on the National Historic Register of Historic Places. And also we have a National Recreational Trail designation for part of our trails. So we have gotten a lot of national awards and national recognition. As I've mentioned, we're citizen-based. We're totally a volunteer organization. But here's the heart of it. Jacksonville's current economy is based 80% on tourism. And this is where we come into play, because people are coming to Jacksonville looking for culture, like the Brit festivals. Have you been to the Brit festivals? We also are finding that a lot of people want a foot type of education where they can actually get out and hike and walk and maybe come by and pick up a coffee later on, because the coffee shops are real close to the trailheads, because our trail system is right in town. Over 100,000 people a year come to little old Jacksonville. We have 2,000 people in town, and 100,000 people come to visit. And our goal is to keep it from looking touristy, keep it from looking carnival-y, and we're doing that by protecting the historic wooded backdrop around Jacksonville. Without tourism and without a strong economy, Jacksonville would return to a depressed state that it was in the 1910s, 20s, 30s, and 40s after the gold mining collapsed. But in the last 10 years, with the focus on the tourist industry and the open space, Jacksonville's economy has been booming. And land prices right now have gone up 800% in the last 15 years because of that. So it shows that we are economically strong right now, and we need to stay that way by protecting the open space around Jacksonville. We have the Forest Legacy Project talks about partners. Right now we have 20 partners working with us, and they go from state agencies to federal agencies, the National Park Service, our own individual contributors, and also private foundations. And it is vital to the economic and physical health of our community and our town residents and the many town visitors to keep a historic green belt around Jacksonville and make sure that it is expanded to willing sellers. Now, I have a map here. You have it in your brochure, a larger map, giving you an idea of some of the properties. We have three different types of ownership: city ownership, federal ownership, which is BLM. These are old mines that are left over from the mining days that BLM now owns, and also the city of Jacksonville and the county right here. That would be Jackson County. And within that, we have a network of 8 miles of trails. We're talking about oak woodlands now that are, they're marked out on this map. There are three of them that would be possible candidates for Forest Legacy monies.
They're on the map here?
No, those are not meant. Oh. I do have them on another map right here that actually shows the lands, if you would like to have that one. We'll get that to you. We didn't know if the tourist map should have our dream on it also, so we actually made two maps while we're at it. People like Senator Atkinson, every time he's in town, either takes a hike or he takes his bike out. He lives about three blocks from one of the trailheads, and so he is out on the trails nearly every day.
We encourage Senator Atkinson to take a hike often here.
The gentleman has so much enthusiasm.
Thank you, Senator Corcoran.
But that pretty well details, real quickly, 13 years of activity, a lot of fundraising, a lot of partnerships to produce one of the most successful land preservation, land conservation projects in the state, totally done with volunteer group.
I guess I could wait until later. I'm trying to see physically the you said the three potential Forest Legacy additions. Okay. It takes Senator Beyer to point them out to me.
They're just just lines.
Yeah, they're just outlined.
Yes.
Yeah, they're not shaded.
That should make them.
How many acres would?
It's 45 acres that we're looking at to purchase.
Okay. Thank you very much. And we can return some of these maps to you. I feel like we've got more than our share up here. In the interest of...
Great.
Yeah, what about the parade? He's still asking, you got to tell us why there's this parade in your name or your honor or whatever it is.
Well, in his enthusiasm, he got a little further on this. The parade was one time, and it was my retirement parade from teaching 33 years in Jacksonville, mostly fifth grade, and being involved in the Woodlands Project.
Okay.
And the whole town turned out and even had a brass band.
Great. That's wonderful. In the interest of time, I'm going to ask both folks from the city of Springfield to come up, and then we'll do Eugene and so on. Is that okay? So that would be Lynn Godwin and Bob Kiefer. And you guys can fight over who gets to go first or says whatever.
Chairman Shields, members of the committee, good morning. My name is Len Goodwin. I'm the Assistant Public Works Director for the City of Springfield. I do have prepared remarks that have been handed out for you, but I think in the interest of time and which is very valuable for all of us, I will just sort of allow you to read those at your leisure and go more directly to some of the things that have been discussed today, which are probably of more immediate interest to you. Let me first briefly describe what the Coburg Hills project is. There is a 2,000-acre farm owned by the Jaqua family, which sits immediately across the McKenzie River from Springfield, in fact, right next to where the new River Bend facility will be erected if it is approved. It's bottom land and about 1,240 acres of Douglas fir and oak forests. The proposal that the Jaquas have put forward is that 1,240-acre forested parcel be enrolled in the Forest Legacy Program. Unfortunately, John Jaqua, the son of the current owners, John and Rosamond Jaqua, is unable to change his schedule to be here today, so I'm going to try as best I can to describe that property as well as the project. Springfield looks at this not as a forest loss issue, as Mr. Kagan was talking about, but rather community gain. We in Springfield look out on this site every morning. It is something that is one of the reasons that many of us came to Springfield, because it is a small town and it is surrounded by the natural beauty that drove people like me away from New York to a state where I can actually see trees that are alive. Nonetheless, it is in danger to some extent, because continued development pressure makes it more and more likely that parcels will be developed all along the north side of the McKenzie River. Even today, there are small parcels being turned into housing, and the tax laws, frankly, tend to make that more and more likely. As property passes from one generation to the next, it becomes increasingly difficult to handle tax issues, and more likely that the next generation will find it necessary to sell the property as a way of maintaining their standard of living. The Jaqua family wants to keep this land as their legacy for the future for all of the residents of Springfield and of Oregon. It is their desire that this not be developed. It is their desire that it be preserved as forest. And it was their initiative that brought this idea forward into the program. It was submitted to the Forest Legacy Program. The reason it was zeroed out in the federal appropriation process early relates directly to one of the questions you had raised, and that was, although we had identified to some extent the sources of local matching revenue, which involved the city and other private parties, including the Jaquas and the Willamette Lane Park and Recreation District, we had not identified them with sufficient detail to make the Congress feel comfortable that, in fact, we were ready to go. As a result, they did not continue this the Coburg Hill project in the appropriation process. One of the questions that was raised was about how we would, how the management of this, how we would ensure that the property did remain consistent with the goals of the Forest Legacy Program. And it looks like for different projects there are different answers. I gather with the with respect to the Eugene project, the property would go into ownership of the city of Eugene. I must admit I'm not familiar with all of these projects, so that was something new to me. In the case of the Coburg Hills project, the Jaqua family would retain ownership. And there would be an easement granted perhaps to the city of Springfield, perhaps to the Willamalane Park and Recreation District, which has more of a responsibility for parks rather than the city, with responsibility to have that, hold that easement. Now, of course, we are accountable to our citizens. Our electorate will be watching if we have these easements to assure that we are, in fact, doing exactly what we propose to do. Similarly, Willamalane and the city and the local utility, the Springfield Utility Board, a number of years ago purchased in common a parcel of property for the purpose, for a wide number of purposes. Now, while this was all private, all public ownership, the important feature that I wanted to bring to your attention today was that what we did was develop a management plan, which is a public document that all of the citizens are aware of that details how we will use that property, how we will make sure that we comply with what we told the citizens was going to happen to that property when we bought it. This is a vehicle that works well in something like the Forest Legacy Program. With this parcel, undoubtedly the Jaqua family, the Park District, the city, perhaps a broad range of other partners would be involved in crafting a management plan that would be something that could act as a guide for all of us as we administer this property through the future.
Mr. Chair?
Yes.
I'm curious about that piece of land. Is it what's the current zoning?
Senator Shields, members of the committee, Senator Corcoran, it is presently zoned for farm and forest use. The zoning would permit subdivision into 160-acre lots at this point in time.
And Mr. Chair, is there a floodplain issue with that property?
Chairman Shields, member of this committee, Senator Corcoran, I believe that the parcel that would be involved in the Forest Legacy Program would not have floodplain issues. The balance of the Jaqua's land, about 800 acres of bottom land, I believe, is within the floodplain.
So I know that was an issue in the siting of the hospital out there.
Yes. Senator Shields, Senator Corcoran, members of the committee, the north side of the McKenzie floodplain is considerably narrower in that particular area than it is on the south side. Actually, with that, Senator Shields, I think I would probably best serve the committee by being able to respond to questions rather than just talking at length myself.
Okay. Bob, I'd like to ask you to make a few comments, and then we'll ask questions of both of you at the same time.
In my comments will be few. Chairman Shields, members of the committee, I'm Bob Kiefer. I'm the superintendent of the Willamalane Park and Recreation District. We serve basically all of Springfield and out to the urban growth boundaries. I was invited to be involved in this project about a year ago with a phone call from City Manager Mike Kelly that he was meeting with the Jaqua family. And wanted to know if Willamalane would be interested in being involved in this particular piece of property if it was acquired. This is a unique piece of property in that it is, as Lynn has said, in our face. When we drive to work in the morning, it's either behind us or in front of us as we go downtown. It is part of what that view shed that makes Springfield known. We're surrounded a lot by forested hills. It's an honor for us to be considered by the Jaqua family as potential holders of this prime piece of real estate that has a lot of values. I want to take a moment, however, and talk to you about you know, not only the state's role, but as public roles, about maintaining a vision about what we want our communities and our state to look like. That when we look beyond today and the problems that face us today, we look out 20, 30, and 50 years, what do we want us, our communities to look like? If it wasn't for people that had vision years ago, we wouldn't have Forest Park. We wouldn't have the beaches we have. Locally in our county, the Howard Buford Recreation Area, the Mount Pisgah, 2,200 acres, 10 minutes outside of Eugene, that is just used by everybody as a recreation haven to get away from the noise of the city, wouldn't be there if somebody didn't have that vision and taken the opportunity to take funds that, like these, are available and leverage those and use them for the public benefit. That's what the Forest Legacy Program is all about for me as a recreation and park provider. It's one of those tools that we have in our toolbox, or could have in our toolbox, if everything was put into place for assuring that we can acquire these properties at a time when it's most beneficial to all of us. When we have willing sellers, when we have people that are thinking down the road, when they have high recreation value, not only today, but they'll even have higher recreational value down the road as the population increases and we compact our growth in the Eugene-Springfield metro area. I think that the other point here that I would make to you is that when we survey folks, when we look at our citizens, we thought, what do you like to do? A lot of folks want to be able to be close to home, but want to be able to get out into the natural environment and walk. You can read your own state comprehensive outdoor recreation plan now that was just completed, and you're going to find the number one recreation value that folks have is walking and being in the natural environment. This project, this Coburg Hills project and the South Hills project, is one of those, are those type of projects that these people really want to have and the type of facilities that they want and enjoy to have. So I cut my comments short, and I do not know everything about the Forest Legacy Program, right, but I encourage you to allow us to have another tool in our toolbox to help acquire these properties.
Thank you. And I just have a quick question for you. I know the projects are very popular. I know you've got lots of public support. Lots of people have been talking about it, whether it's Ed or Larry, they've talked about the support and so on. So you've got the public support. You've got the money that's sitting in Washington that can be available. How do you address the people that are just plain ideologically opposed to money, to property moving from private ownership to some kind of public ownership, and the loss of property taxes and loss of production and all that stuff? How would you respond to that?
Senator Shields, members of the committee, my personal response is this. Number one, this program is a willing seller program. This is people in potentially our project. The Jaquas came to us wanting to leave a legacy of having this property in its present form, remain in its present form, knowing that there are potential folks within their own family that do not want to always carry that legacy. This way it would continue. As far as many of these properties, and as far as this property goes, I believe a lot of this is on farm deferral or is in reduced tax status and is not paying a great deal of taxes at this point. So I don't see a lot of loss, at least on this particular project, that I can speak to because of the type of zoning and the type of tax deferral it's already in.
Okay. Thank you. Other questions? I know that we're running late, and so I want to hurry here.
Senator Shields, with your indulgence, both Bob and I have meetings at 12 o'clock in Eugene. I wonder if we might be excused.
Sure. Thank you.
No.
Yeah.
Thank you, Senator.
Talk to your senator.
Thank you.
Be anything important happening.
Real quick, I want to get Andrea Milner up here. Minor, I'm sorry. Covering too much territory here. From the Parks Department, Eugene.
Sounds like I should repeat that for the record.
Right.
I am Andrea Reiner. I represent the Division of Parks and Open Space for the City of Eugene. And I greatly appreciate this opportunity to talk about the Forest Legacy Program, but maybe more importantly in general about open space program in the Eugene Springfield area. I'll tell a little bit about the Eugene story so there's more information, background about how we are participating. The Forest Legacy Program kind of came to us while we were in the middle of an acquisition program. In 1998, voters in Eugene overwhelmingly passed a $25 million bond measure that addressed development and renovation of our existing parks, acquisition of parks for future developed neighborhood and community parks, and also acquisition of open space to extend our ridgeline trail open space area, which is currently primarily in the southeast portion of the city. This is a program that's basically been in place since approximately 1938 when voters approved funding to purchase Spencer Butte, and has been in plans most recently 1989. We have a Eugene Park and Recreation Plan that talks about providing this linked set of open space and recreational trails from basically from our connection with Springfield and the Willamette River on the east to towards Fern Ridge Reservoir to the west. The bond measure initially was supported by two different groups, a strong open space protection group that had an acquisition program of about $25 million they desired to complete the program. There was also a strong youth park constituency that saw that money really needed to go towards an investment in healthy activity for youth. We were able to bring those groups together, formulate this diverse development and acquisition program, and pass the measure, as I said, with approximately 67% support of the voters. The acquisition program for the Ridgeline was reduced to about $3.5 million, but we have been working to leverage those funds in a variety of ways with local, state, and federal dollars to meet the high expectations that the public has for the program. I'd like to think that I'm here as a representative of my community, but also a community of Parks and Recreation agencies throughout the state that we recognize in these difficult times that that other critical functions may be getting the prioritization of funds, and that whatever we can do to leverage our funds to get our programs done, we are requested by our constituency to, again, meet those high expectations with limited funds. Certainly a federal program that meets our current goals, meets stated objectives from voter-approved bond measures and existing plans, makes a lot of sense. So we were already in this program. We were contacted by some property owners, Mr. Novick, Mr. Meisen, about their willingness to participate and see their property become part of this Eugene Springfield legacy, and we did not have adequate funding to complete the entire acquisition, but we did have the match funds to participate with Forest Legacy, so it was really seen as a wonderful opportunity to bring a lot of values together, not just protection of the land, but public access for passive recreation. The visual quality that Mr. Kiefer spoke about is really important. We don't have an ocean. We don't have, Mount Hood. We have our South Hills, and we're pretty proud of them. It's also a cultural value. This is really about our cultural landscape that we that the early settlers found here, and it's really preserving that. And so it brings a lot of our values together with this particular program. I also want to point out that this is part of a regional vision that's been developed through a cooperative planning process with Lane County, with City of Springfield, Willamette Lane Park and Recreation District, and Eugene. And I think Forest Legacy has something to do with that, is starting to look at these resources in a regional context, not just considering specific constituencies, but really saying this is about our greater landscape, and it doesn't follow borders. And so we've really seen a growth in the cooperative efforts between the different agencies. I think that's not just a good way to do things, but another efficient use of taxpayer dollars. I'm afraid I could go on for 2 hours about open space, and I know this time is limited and you've been listening patiently, so I will
end
it with that.
Yeah, I hope anything else you have, you'll get to us in writing. And I am kind of frustrated at myself because we have so much information I'd like to get and can't get it all.
I was going to tell you what a beautiful Senate district that's in, too.
Oh, she was going to say that.
That was point C.
That was point Z on your list.
My wife makes me hike on the Timberline Trail. It's her Atkins diet for me.
I see.
It's horrible. Such a very pretty place. Up and down, up and down.
Very pretty, up
very
and down.
Pretty.
Also health benefits.
It's a health benefit, I suppose.
There are two people left that we haven't heard from, and I'm going to ask them both to come. They've probably never met one another before, but Rob Fussell, the city manager for the city of Gresham, and Adam Novick, a landowner, just mentioned a few seconds ago. And I know that the comedian of the Senate has to leave now, but we'll try and wrap up in a few minutes. Rob, can you welcome?
Yes.
Glad to have you down here. Senator Minnis wanted to be here this morning, but tied up like usual.
Well, I can sure understand that. I can tell you there's no parades being held for me in town. I think it's like a railroad out of town on all the situation we've had with the Hogan Butte situation. I don't have to tell you we've been on a wild ride. But I can tell you I'm certainly not here to whine about that at all. What I'm here to do is share with you our perspectives on the Forest Legacy Program, and specifically address some of the policy issues that I think are valid that have been brought forward by the various committee members, and to certainly offer our support. If you need anyone from the grassroots level who's just slugged it out for the last year and a half and lost, we'd be interested in participating in any subcommittees that you might set up on a subject. I would say this, that the Hogan Butte is a good example, sort of a classroom, as to some of the main issues that I think will face the Forest Legacy Program as it moves forward. I know while the whole thing was underway, it struck me as interesting. When it all started, the landowners were really excited that possibly this could be Forest Legacy property. They had originally planned to develop it. Then heard about this and thought, wait, this would even be better for the community. It fits better within the master plan of the city and within their own desires and wishes. So what happened is they took it off the market and said, let's go. Let's all go together and get this done. You were talking about funding and matching money and that kind of thing. What we found from the start on this was everyone wanted to play. Metro evaluated the Forest Legacy option, also looked at how it fit in with the rest of Gresham's overall big picture, and said, we've got $500,000 put on the table. I just met with David Bragdon this week. He's still leaving it on the table, even though this particular go-around for Forest Legacy looks like it's passing us by. The neighbors, of course, you've heard passion pleas from our neighbors. I don't know that I can remember a time when we've had as many passionate neighbors on anything. And I'm certain that you wouldn't be surprised that they presented me with a letter the other day and said, Rob, we'll just go out and collect $200,000 and give it to the city if that'll help make this happen. And they would provide that to me April 1st. I was concerned because we were in the middle of the urban growth boundary expansion effort, and we were pretty well bogged down. I was really curious, as all these problems I'm hearing are happening, is this program really something we ought to be involved with? So we made contact with our congressional delegation, and in my file right here I have letters from Blumenauer and from Wyden and from Smith, all indicating that, hey, this is really right in the middle of the broad definition of what we hope Forest Legacy can do. And so I got all that in writing, and I said, well, okay, we're on pretty solid ground from the federal level, and let's move forward, and we did. But I think the business of and I'm sorry that Representative Morgan left before I got a chance to comment, because her memo of October 27th that was directed to Senators Durfler and Messerly, and I'm assuming you've probably seen it, is actually quite accurate as you look at item number 3, little a. And she says the main problem, interface with the land use planning system, she says, the main problem is how to square Forest Legacy with our land use planning system. She says all the parcels have been proposed, all of the parcels that have been proposed so far are zoned for some kind of residential development, and then she goes on. I think she's right on. And this is, if there's any area that we've got it hammered in Oregon, this is the area where we ought to be able to get at the policy issues the fastest. We've just gone through, and I was thinking about the Hogan Butte project, just to give you an example. We took a look at it and said, well, this fits in with our Parks and Open Space Master Plan. As you may not know, Gresham citizens tax themselves $10 million by some of the buttes out there, and we've got, this is the last one left. We're losing this one. It's going under development. I think the permits are going to be issued for the first 14 acres within days. And so I have a hunch that we're just losing it. Not all of it is going under development right now. Hopefully some of the 50 acres could still be available, and if we could come up with a way to buy it, I think that the city and its other partners would want to do that. And that's why Metro left the money on the table. The property in question is also in the city hillside district, which if we could get 100 houses out of this whole 50 acres, that's probably a reasonable estimate. The Metro's functional plan, amended just in December 2002, allocates over 20,000 new dwelling units. Some people have been concerned about how we're converting land from public from private to public, and we're giving up residential land and flying in the face of our own land use laws and that sort of land use requirements and so on. And that's just not valid. The potential units that could be built on the property are insignificant in light of the fact that we've just got. Pardon me.
Because of the slope or what?
Well, I'm just saying we can only build 100, and we've got 20,000 new ones allocated in the Metro Functional Plan. In addition, we just added 1,275 new acres in the UGB expansion, and we're actually nearly 350 acres of that is for upscale housing, and then the rest of it is industrial sanctuary. And so we're, overall, cities are working very diligently to plan cities that, as was said here just a few minutes ago, we want to have in 20, 30, 40 years, where we have a good balance of livability, preservation of our natural resources, and jobs that will fuel the families and keep food on the table. So the message I would send to you is that from our perspective, not accepting the Forest Legacy Program would be a gross error. Understanding their policy issues, we think those ought to be addressed, and I would agree with the statement that was made earlier that this is a tool that we can use. Many other states are using it for these same purposes, and we would encourage you to advance that forward. We will plan to, if the program exists, we will plan to bring forward an additional project or two as we look forward that we think fit into it very nicely.
Thank you, Rob.
Mm-hmm.
My name is Adam Novick, Senator Shields, Senator Beyer, Ms. Collins. Thank you for this opportunity to be here. My name is Adam Novick. I'm a private landowner from the Eugene area, and I'm grateful to you for asking these questions about the Forest Legacy Program, and I hope you will have occasion to develop a subcommittee or whatever to take a serious look at the costs and benefits of this program, because I agree with those that said today that it's a real valuable thing to Oregon. It will help Oregon be more of what it should be. In the hope of helping this cost-benefit analysis, I'd like to briefly share some thoughts on, one, perceived cost, and two, benefits that I believe are real with respect to the program. But first, let me please give a brief background. I've submitted two properties for consideration of the Forest Legacy Program. One is a two-acre property in Eugene, the Fawn Lily Rise property. That was part of the South Hills Project that received a 15th ranking nationally. I stepped in to save the property in 1999 after local government declined to do so, and it's got one of the last remnants, maybe the last remnant, of native savanna bunchgrass in Eugene. The other property is a 258-acre property. It's also part of the South Hills Project, but it's not currently budgeted, and it's about half of its oak savanna. It's about a mile from Eugene. My folks have had it since 1961. I took over management in 94, and it's undeveloped property. In 97, I decided if we're serious about wanting to see this property be conserved, I better start shaking the trees. And so I've been working pretty hard since 1997 trying to invent or discover an alternate outcome for the property, because I believe its best and highest use is as conservation lands. And the Forest Legacy Program was the first real fruit to fall out of the trees. And so I'd like to first talk about one real benefit to the program in my mind, and that's addressing the question that Senator Beyer raised, and that's with respect to, as Ed Meissen was saying, a real benefit of this program, as I see, is that it helps protect private landowners from financial harm from regulation under well-intended conservation policies. Senator Beyer rightfully asked, well, what the heck are you talking about here? I can unfortunately share very explicit details of this. As a result of stepping in to try to save this two-acre property, I became at risk of losing $100,000, up to $100,000, from regulation under the present rules for Goal 5. I'm happy to say that local government has subsequently stepped in and purchased the property at fair market value, so I'm now out of harm's way. But I believe I'm very much at risk for the other property, potentially under Goal 5, but also under the Endangered Species Act. And from my experience, I believe that any private landowner that tries to conserve or restore habitat is at risk of financial harm from regulation under Goal 5 or the Endangered Species Act. So, what's one of the greatest things about the Forest Legacy Program, from my view, both as a conservationist and as a private landowner, is it gives the public a positive way to express its desire to save critters. You know, I believe it's not just Democrats that want to save critters. I believe, you know, from talking to people on both sides, everyone, or not everyone, but a majority of people want to save critters. And this is a way to do it in a positive way. And so I'm really, I think that's the program's greatest strength. I'd like to address one perceived cost, and that's come up, a potential loss of tax revenue. Our Spencer Creek property, it's zoned F2, it's the larger piece. It's the taxes are about $1 an acre per year, and I believe that's typical for F2 forest lands in Oregon, or at least in the Eugene area. So 258 acres, it's taxed at $258.56 per year. That was 2001. Ed Meissen's property, current taxes on that are $137.91 a year. The Fawn Lily Rise property, that's urban. That taxes were more significant for that was would be $900, but I enrolled in the state open space tax deferral program, so the taxes are only $54. Last, I'd like to talk about another benefit of the program, and that's bringing dollars to Oregon. I guess it was 2001, the federal government credited the state of Oregon, or maybe 2002, forgive me, $330,000 just as starter money for this program. And most of that was targeted for Eugene. $75,000 was targeted to purchase the Fawn Lily Rise property. This property was, I mean, valuable enough to the public that local government decided to spend their own money on it after the money, after Oregon lost that money. So, as a result of not implementing the program in Oregon, City of Eugene has already lost $75,000 of their own money on that one property, and I believe they've subsequently purchased another Forest Legacy site, the Demers property, using their own money. So I'm not sure how much that was, but I presume it was well over $100,000. So I believe the program is a wonderful thing, and I'd like to express my gratitude to Oregon Department of Forestry, the Nature Conservancy, City of Eugene, other local governments for what they're doing to try to bring this program here. And I hope you have occasion to take a serious and considered look at the costs and benefits, because I'm confident that you will have an opportunity to you'll see that this program is a great opportunity for Oregon. Thank you very much.
Thank you. I know that we've now spent 2 hours and 2 minutes of time this morning trying to cover about what ought to have been a five-hour hearing. My apologies for rushing several of you as much as I did. We've obviously raised more issues than we've solved. I'm going to be talking to several people, at least in the Senate, and seeing if we can maybe push this a little bit farther during the session than we have so far. I don't know what form that'll take right now, but I want to get into some discussions. I received several notes from people that indicate that maybe we ought to be doing that. As she left, Representative Morgan thanked me for the hearing and said she appreciated our getting these issues out on the table. And I think that the job is more than just getting them out on the table. It's to figure out what you do now that you've got them out on the table. So let's just kind of stay tuned and see what we can do from here. And with that, I'm going to adjourn the hearing. Thank you very much.